Well, I was just literally about to start off by saying a heartfelt congratulations to Team Maddie.
Oh, yeah. Good follow-up from last episode.
For folks that are just tuning in, go back to last week and listen to the intro because we had a whole thing about British Bake Off. Maddie won. But I had this whole side quest where Maddie and Tasha fell in love. And there was going to be this like British Bake Off romance. And then come to find out, if you watch the finale, like his girlfriend, like he's obsessed with his fiance and it's this great love story. And she actually signed him up and then he ends up winning. But
yeah, he's super obsessed with his fiance and Tasha's not into dudes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So it wasn't going to work for a couple of reasons, but
you were shipping him pretty hard though. You tried.
it was like, oh, wow. What chemistry, you know, while baking. But anyway, he wins. I was holding Edie, my 3-year-old, and I was like, I shouted like, ah, yeah, Team Maddie. She starts crying. It's like, ah, damn it. But yeah, congratulations, Maddie, longtime listener of Mops and Moes. definitely has never listened to this podcast, but yeah, your first.
If anyone in the UK knows Maddie, the Great British Bake Off winner, I checked out his Instagram. They've been like, companies have been sending him lots of free like baking equipment and stuff because he's famous now. But he is a PE teacher. He teaches physical education. So if somebody can track him down.
Dude, let's get Maddie.
We got to get Maddie on the pod.
Mops and Mo's side quest. Let's get Maddie on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you don't win anything. You get a bouquet.
Yeah.
Bouquet of flowers and a crystal.
Like a cake stand. Yeah.
Cake stand. Yeah. And then a shit ton of like free, you know, job opportunities or whatever.
Yeah. But like, I think it's awesome. This is like unrelated to British Bake Off, but like it's cool that he's a PE teacher getting featured because PE teachers almost never get featured. Last year, there was a PE teacher who was a finalist for the National Teacher of the Year Award.
In the UK?
And I think it was the first time, this is in the US, and I think it was the first time ever that a PE teacher has made it that far in the Teacher of the Year competition, which tells you a little bit about the state of physical education in this country, at least.
Well, I remember, I mean, when I was doing my master's degree, in Scotland, there was a sister program at Edinburgh that was for physical education for PE, which I thought was, I mean, it was different, but I don't know if.
Do you still talk to any of those people?
It was a totally different program. Like they weren't, but I remember at orientation, they're like, oh, right. And here's the master's degree in physical education. I was like, you can get a master's in PE. I don't know if it's a requirement for teaching or not, but,
We literally, one of our guests like 2 episodes ago has his master's in physical education. What are you talking about?
No, I know you can get it. I'm just saying, I don't know if it's a requirement for coaching or teaching PE in the UK.
I don't think it's a, I mean, I don't know. In the US, you know, I don't think it's an entry level requirement.
You know who would know the answer to that would be Maddie.
That's true. Future episode.
There's no way that dude's coming on this podcast.
If anybody has the hookups in the baking subculture in the UK.
I'd love to ask him about his rough puff and just kind of how he goes about creating pastry because he was quite good.
That could be a fun 2-parter episode. Part one, Drew gets to get all his baking nerdiness out. Part two, we'll talk about a little bit of physical education.
And then part three, we wonder why no one listens to this podcast. what are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about kind of a topic I get asked about all the time. I don't know about you. But the overarching question of how do you plan physical training for a military organization?
Yes. So to be fair, I have gotten this question before because I think, well, we may get into this, but I think that some people think that there's just like a wholesale difference between what they might do for themselves and then what they would do for the organization that they work for or with. I don't think that they're that drastically different, but we could unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, we will definitely dig into it because I think a point we've made on this podcast before that we'll definitely make several times during this episode is that we're not about templates because templates only work in certain situations.
You've literally designed one.
It's a framework, I think. I think there's nothing in it in terms of like...
Yes. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I get what you're saying. Like we're going to... So like backing up for a second, people have seen me discuss this on the Instagram page. The army and the military run on checklists. There's a checklist for everything. If you're going to medevac somebody, there's a checklist. If you're going to call for fire, there's a checklist.
I was going to say fumes.
you can print all these things out and you can laminate them and you can put them in a cargo pocket, and that's how you can do everything you ever need to do. And for whatever reason, despite the fact that we've been doing physical training for like centuries, right, at this point, there's no checklist for physical training. I remember I met with a mentor a couple years ago when they were still drafting FM7-22, the Army's new manual for health and fitness stuff. And he was commanding a brigade at the time. And he pulled out like the draft of the FM, and he pulled out a copy of the brigade combat team manual, like the manual that theoretically told him everything he needed to know about how to run his entire brigade. And the fitness manual was like twice as thick as the brigade combat team manual.
Yeah.
And it, like, I think obviously there's a lot to learn, right? People get masters and PhDs in this field. There's tons of cool knowledge we could share, but I think we've done a bad job of distilling that stuff down to something that is actionable by a person who is not an expert in the field and has a lot of other stuff going on. How do we give that person an easy tool to design decent training, whether or not they have human performance staff available?
So we made one.
We sure did.
Or Alex made one. I just proofread it.
Yeah. And by the time this episode is publishing, it'll be available on our website.
For free.
Yeah. It's a little fun. I tried to make it look like an Army form. I did get a couple of DMs from people asking me to make this like a DD form, like a Department of Defense, like any service.
We don't have that power.
Maybe we'll come up with a version of that eventually. I just don't like.
Can we do
my background's Army. Drew's background is Army and a little bit of Air Force, but special warfare, so it's different. Like, I don't know how the other services really operate, but I really do know how the Army operates. So we're starting here. Secretly. If anybody out there is like an expert in the way Navy or Air Force or Marine Corps roll, like come chat with me. We'll like make a version that matches that a little bit better. But for now, it's templated like a DA form. It should look just like forms you're used to, other than that the proponent agency is MOPS and MOES instead of an actual headquarters.
That is a headquarters. We're a headquarters.
And that instead of a regulation, it cites MOPSandMOES.com.
Boom. So yeah, the physical training planning guide, like you were saying, we'll have this by the time this airs, we'll have this on the website. You can, I mean, it'll be free. You can download it. You can use it. It could even pass muster as like a real form. I mean, it looks legit.
I mean, like spoiler alert, who knows what'll happen, but I've socialized this with a few like people who are actually still in uniform in the Army and stuff. And there just seems to be some desire for it. So if the Army decides to take it and make it an official form, they should pay me, but we can discuss that later.
They won't.
No, they won't. They definitely won't. But I will, before we get rolling, I want to lay a foundation of like policy references, because there's a ton of doctrine about fitness. There's not a lot of policy about fitness. And like for whatever reason, people only read certain policies in the Army. Like my whole time going through, everybody knew exactly like what the current policy was on haircuts and mustaches and stuff, and like how far down your like tattoos. Pants could go when they're bloused out of your boots, and like where you could have tattoos and all that stuff. So like 670-1, people know that one. But for whatever reason, nobody seems that familiar with the actual policy on fitness. So I want to lay down a couple that are useful. Basically, all of the policy on fitness comes from AR-350-1, Appendix F, Paragraph 5. It is a giant paragraph. I apologize in advance if you have to go try and read it. It's like a 4-page paragraph.
What is AR-350-1?
That's a great question. I think it's like training and leader development. Yeah, Army training and leader development.
And that's where the fitness policy?
Yeah, and they stuck it in an appendix to the fitness policy. And it has not been updated for the ACFT, so it references the APFT a bunch. But it's got some decent stuff in there, and I want to cite a few of those pieces because they are useful.
Go ahead.
One is, and I'm just going to read the direct quotes here, right? Physical readiness tests will not form the foundation of unit or individual PRT programs. So what that's saying is, if anybody ever decided to inspect physical training programs, which I've never seen that happen, but if they came in and said, like, what is the goal of your PT program? I bet a ton of commanders would answer, oh, to get like a high score on the fitness test. And according to policy, that's wrong. You shouldn't be training to the test. The test should just be a check, right?
I mean, there's some pretty high level people who will tell you that the point of all of this is to get a 600 on your ACFT.
There certainly are, right?
Just saying. I think that was a safe comment. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't.
I think you said that before on this podcast. There are people with stars on their chest who have contradicted that statement. Yes.
Yeah.
Another one, so like if you're not going to base it on the test, what should you base it on? And the policy says that you should establish a plan based on your mission essential task list, warrior tests and battle drills, high physical demand tasks. So that's where you should be looking. You should be looking at your actual mission. Yeah, it's a bunch of acronyms. Don't worry about it.
You wrote down a bunch of acronyms. What is CST?
Common soldier tasks. Those are the ones that apply to everybody, regardless of MOS.
And then mission essential task list.
Task list. Yeah, every commander knows their medal. You should be finding the most physically demanding task on that list, training to that.
Just all that kind of stuff. Just for the other civilians out there who are listening.
Did you listen to me? I didn't use the acronyms.
I was very proud of you.
I spelled them out.
But I think once you spell them out, it's like, okay, well, like, what actually is that?
That's fair. Yeah. I guess I'll go through about mission essential task list. Every unit has the tasks they're supposed to be trained on, and they have to like rate how proficient they are in all those tasks. If you look in those, like some things are very explicit. Like if you're like a gun team in an artillery unit, you know exactly how many minutes you should be able to like load and fire around, and you can like train to that in terms of the physical demands of it. That's not going to be super clear for all units. I get that. But like the first thing you should look to for an idea of how to set your goals is the actual physical demands of the mission you're responsible for. If you don't have that, that's when you move to all those other acronyms that Drew's freaking out seeing. WTBDs, warrior tasks and battle drills, common soldier tasks, CSTs. You can look those up in like the skill level 1 handbook. It's tasks that all soldiers should be able to do. Every soldier should be able to evacuate a casualty. Every soldier should be able to like react to contact, like basic stuff. And within those tasks are the high physical demand tasks. And those are the ones that they use to develop the ACFT actually.
Hey.
All right. Last one. And we'll be done with talking about policy, and Drew can relax because this is not his space. This is my nerdy world where I read these things and nobody else cares. Yeah, that's fine.
I hardly read FM-722.
Right. So what is the actual requirement for physical training for folks that are active duty? So full-time soldiers, whether that's AGR or active duty, the requirement as stated by AR-350-1 is 4 to 5 times per week, 60 to 90 minute sessions, and commanders are encouraged to structure the duty day so they can conduct physical readiness training at a time and location that is most effective in eliciting the desired fitness outcomes. PRT at 6:30 is authorized, but not required. It's one of my favorite sentences in all policy.
So for those of you that don't know what that means, physical training, it does not have to take place at 6:30 in the morning?
Correct. You are allowed to do it then, but it's not required. And technically, you should be looking and figuring out when and where can I conduct it to get the desired outcomes, right? It's literally a measures of effectiveness statement in the policy.
I know Dr. East, we talked about this when he was on, but like, when did that become codified?
The tradition of 6:30? Or
yeah.
I honestly do not know when. Well before I was in uniform. Those of you who haven't listened to the Dr. East episode, I bet he laid it out in that episode. We just don't remember, but he talked about how, like, if you go far enough back, traditionally speaking, the Army like had breakfast. Then mid-morning did like what we would consider PT, like individual fitnessy kind of stuff, exercise.
But like in formation.
And then in the afternoon, yeah, it would be formation stuff for sure. But then in the afternoon,
like team
they
sports.
Would also add in like team sport kind of stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just picturing a bunch of dudes in like super short shorts doing like toe touches and stuff.
For sure. The knee and ankle rotation.
But now it's, yep. And now it just seems as though PT has been dumped to the beginning of the day, and yeah. No one, I mean, you're seeing people do different cycles and things, but it's been curious to watch that, and everyone acts like it's such a revolutionary thing. And we've even talked about doing episodes or blog posts on it, but it's pretty funny that it's like written right there in policy. Like,
yeah,
you don't have to do it at 6:30.
Yeah. And I get some of the logic. It's like, I know at one point it was explained to me that like Ranger Regiment was a big part of that with like making it in the morning and making it 90 minutes and all that stuff.
Thanks, Tyler.
Right. It has a lot to do with like, yes, admittedly, if you schedule it in the middle of the day, there's a higher risk that somebody will come step on it with some last minute requirement and then you're not going to get any PT in. 100% understand that risk. And that is why people have defaulted to putting it in the morning and protecting that time. So I can understand it. I'm not fully like, I don't think that came out for no reason. It is for a reason. But I think if people are in a position where they have enough control over their schedule and they can manage their time effectively, there might be other alternatives that work just as well or better in a lot of places.
I've heard like a time zone thing too. Like if you're, especially at a command level, if you're dealing with folks in different time zones, you can't just like dip out in the middle of the day and do PT, even if it is. Yeah. Anyway,
it's a factor. I just get really tired of, this is going back to like when I was a captain and got mad about stuff all the time, but just like sergeant majors and first sergeants not doing PT, just like guarding parking lots to make sure people didn't leave until they'd completed their 90 minutes of whatever they were doing. That stuff infuriated me all
the time. I've seen brigade commanders do that.
Especially when, like, for a long time at Fort Drum, we were doing shift work. So I had guys on night shift and day shift, and these guys didn't know that. And like, guys would get in trouble for going to the DFAC at the wrong time. Or like, we would do PT early. Like, we'd get in at like 5 or 6, we'd be done a little bit earlier. So they'd be leaving a little bit earlier, and somebody's trying to yell at them. Like, not, no matter how locked down you are, you're never going to have a situation where the entire installation stops everything and does PT for that hour. So there will always be other people doing slightly different things. I don't know. Whatever.
Really never done the All-American run down Long Street on Fort Liberty.
Don't get me started on those speakers. I don't understand why they have speakers playing Cadence.
It's motivating.
It is not. Not for me. Okay. So that's it for policy stuff. Should we talk about this form?
Yes. Okay. Let's talk about the form.
Okay.
So, physical training planning guide.
There we go. And if you go look on the website, you will find a blank version that you can download and fill out. And you will also find an example version filled out with like a random week of training. I'm not telling people.
If you're driving and listening to this and you think that, oh, I don't have this form in front of me, I should turn this episode off. Don't do that. It's still, there's still relevant conversation to
And it's not a particularly complicated form. You'll get it by listening.
Carry on.
Yeah. So, other than like admin data, the first thing you're going to run into on this form is commander's intent. And this may require you, if you're not the commander, to engage your commander in a real conversation to shape their intent into something clear. I think this is a problem in a lot of places where people don't know what the goal of their training is in the first place.
Hmm.
And like not every commander is going to have it like off the cuff ready to go. And they're also not going to like phrase it in like exercise physiology terms. They're not going to tell you like focus on aerobic capacity and power. Like, no, they're never going to do that. Like we used to talk about that stuff, like training MFTs. Commanders are going to phrase it in like layman's terms, and that is fine. And that is what we want to be on here, but you may have to work with them a little bit to talk about why the goal needs to be something other than just the fitness test, and like drag out of them like clear guidance that you can operate on.
Well, and I mean, there's probably too a world where using something like this form, or even just sort of the philosophy behind the form, like you could very easily kind of weave your physical training plan within your battle rhythm.
Like absolutely.
I don't see that happen enough. I think it should. I think that, like, you know, you'll have these training meetings where everything is so laid out. I mean, and we talk about, you know, maybe training and periodization shouldn't necessarily follow that same kind of direction. But regardless, if you know when certain key events are happening on the calendar, like there's probably a world where you could, again, like weave your training into that. And so commander's intent could be, hey, look, we've got a deployment coming up in 6 months. This is kind of what that mission set's going to look like. Let's sort of figure out how to train. I mean, that's just kind of basic strength and conditioning, really.
For the nerds that are here, Drew definitely hasn't read AR-350-1, but he almost accidentally quoted it there because that is literally what it says.
God, do not put that on me. I don't even know where you find those. Like, do you Google those and they just come up?
Not really. You kind of have to know which one you're looking for. A
secret library of policy. Yeah, I don't really read much military stuff after like 1950.
That's fair. No. Like historical military physical culture on Army Pubs.
Give me a World War I training guidance. I'm all over it.
Drew did kind of set up the next block, though. There's a planning dates section as well. The idea of that is you can predict some of the major events that are on the training calendar and have some predictability around that. Some of them might require training for them. The example form uses E3B, expert soldier, expert infantry, expert field medical badge, as like something they're training up for. It also mentions block leave that would be a disruptor of training, any trips to the field, all sorts of things like that, that you might want to consider how to plan around it. An important note here is this form is only set up to plan a week of training at a time. I've had plenty of discussions with people about this. I think like strength coaches will be thinking in terms of microcycle, mesocycle, macrocycle kind of stuff. This is just a microcycle for sure. Could you put together a longer term training plan where you start to like quote unquote periodize around various goals or disruptions and things like that? You absolutely could. If there's enough demand for it, might make a form that works for that as well. But the flip side of that is I've had plenty of conversations about how if you really think you're predicting what physical training session you're going to do 3, 4, 5 weeks from now, you have underestimated the amount of chaos in the military. Like not just the unpredictability of people's responses to training, but also just the unpredictability of what's going on in your unit. And so many things could change that I think it's most realistic to plan kind of a week at a time. I think that's what a lot of units are doing. I want them to have a longer term goal in mind, but I think it's still okay to work a week at a time towards that goal.
Yeah. So I do it.
Cool. All right. Next section. Training modalities, frequencies, and stuff like that. This is all set up around something I've dabbled in a little bit. I've made posts on the Instagram for this for sure. Gotten some pretty good feedback on it. I've used it for briefs and things like that. This is the checklist portion. This is the like, what should I be doing at PT? How do I list it out and check some boxes off? So it's structured around two categories. Well, I guess three categories. The first category is movement patterns. I would love to one day see foundational movement patterns be in the doctrine, but that hasn't happened yet. Well, that's the top of my list for like recommended revisions. Depending on whose list you find when you Google foundational movement patterns, you're going to find a few different ones. Pretty much everybody agrees on hinge, squat, lunge, push, pull.
There's people that'll fight you on that.
I'm sure there are. And like, is lunge really just a subcategory of squat? And I got it. But like a lot of people agree on those. The other ones we've included here are carry, drag, brace, and twist. You could kind of combine brace and twist if you want. They're opposites of each other. Yes, like a drag is going to look a lot like a one squat hinge type of pattern, but it's a different enough that I categorize it separately. I didn't include on here, but other people would call locomotion a foundational movement pattern. Yeah. That kind of falls into like anything running. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So this is by no means like the be-all, end-all list. If you have a slightly different list you like, that's fine. But this does a pretty good job of checking the boxes on movement patterns you would want to include. Next to each one of these is a frequency box. You essentially use that as like a like check it off as you plan it. But you can also mark if you're hitting certain things multiple times, because there are definitely things that you might want to hit more than others, depending on the goal you're training for. Drew, you can stop me at any point, but otherwise I'm going to keep rambling.
Conditioning. Actually, go ahead. Stop rambling. Pause. Because we talked about this before we recorded frequency. So I think maybe there might be some confusion between volume and frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like thinking out, I'm thinking as I'm talking with this, because I've seen this happen before. And like in this case, being a weekly thing, frequency is the number of times per week you would encounter that movement. So in this example, like squat being a movement pattern, the frequency for that particular week might be one. So that means you would do the squat pattern once that week. The volume within that is different. So like if you're doing three sets of five, volume would be 15 sets or not 15 sets, sorry, 15 reps. And then, some people would include total weight in that volume calculation, whatever, but just to differentiate between frequency and volume.
Absolutely. I think
the point you're trying to get across and what the form provides is a place for somebody to, like you said, basically list the movement patterns that are of interest to them, given their goals. And then next to that kind of dictate, okay, I want, or we want as a group to spend the next couple of weeks focusing on lower body strength. Okay. Well, if you're telling me that, but then the frequency of the squat is lower than the frequency of like pushing or i.e. bench press, it's like, well, are you really? So it's just kind of a way of, you've listed your organizational goals, the commander's intent, what you're trying to train for. The modalities and the frequencies give you a kind of second layer of like, okay, if that's what you're after, then show me. And then what we'll get into later kind of dives a little bit deeper, but hopefully that made sense.
I think it made sense. It also works well because I think as a baseline, I would want to see most people touching each of these movement patterns at least once per week. If people go look at the example filled out form, they'll see that the only ones that I hit twice in the week are brace and twist. And that's just because I worked in some core training on a couple days. But you could absolutely, if the training goal was more focused on like something specific around strength, you might want to hit like hinge twice. You might like a deadlift and a deadlift variation or 2 days of deadlifting, but
you could even twist and shout.
You can throw some shouts in. You can throw some yeets in, actually.
No, don't train for the test, Alex. We already mentioned in policy the test should not.
Well, here's a little room for discussion, right? You don't have to be training for the test to occasionally incorporate the movements that are on the test.
I think, big friend of the pod, Tony Gernston, rumored to have just done test defense over and over and over and over as his training. So maybe he's an example of what not to do.
And I think,
sorry, Tony,
there is something to that, right? And I'll, like, this is like full clarity, right? And like, maybe Tony will get mad. I don't know. I had a chat with Tony several years ago that I don't know if he remembers when he came and visited the fitness school.
This is the Sergeant Major of the Army we're talking about, by the way.
Yeah, he came in and asked us for advice on training because he maxed out every event except for the power throw. And some of my NCOs, my instructors for the course, were like giving him advice on how to train. But it was very clear that he had been training the way he trains for a couple decades, and it had worked out pretty well for him. And he was not actually interested in changing the way he trains. So
read the room, guys.
This gets complicated. Yeah. I had a fantastic NCO start drawing a force velocity curve on a whiteboard.
Oh God.
And it was not the right setting for that.
Jeez. So yeah, twist and shout anyway.
Sure. Moving on to the next category is conditioning modalities. And this is maybe before we publish the form, I'll reconsider my use of the word modalities because I don't think it's really the right word. People use that word to sound smart and they don't really like know what they're talking about. I saw like some really good discussion of this from a guy that we'll hopefully get on the podcast here soon.
About modalities?
Yeah, because like people think kettlebells are a modality, or like barbells are a modality, or sandbags are a modality, and they really aren't.
Those are implements.
Those are just implements, exactly. And you can do like anything with any of those implements. And that's actually, this is a good circle back to the movement patterns. The reason I like the movement patterns is because it doesn't matter whether you're training in a fully equipped gym or with like a locker full of ACFT equipment or with a big rock you found or with logs or with just body weight. Like the movement patterns apply regardless of the implement, and you can train them even when you don't have all the exact fitness equipment you're used to in the gym. And I think that's important for realistic military physical training environments where you like sometimes might have those nice implements, but a lot of the time you're working with whatever you happen to have in your unit, which might be nothing.
Yeah.
Hopefully that resonates with people. I don't know if that needs like more explanation, but I've had people message me a bunch of times, and we're going to talk about it a little bit more towards the end of this. But like this exact framework also applies to field PT, right? Like if you're going to go to the field, and I should put an asterisk on that. Field PT and whether I encourage it or not highly depends on what you're doing in the field. If you're like light infantry and like walking the whole time and like dragging stuff and carrying stuff and super physically fatigued all the time, maybe you don't need field PT that much. Maybe some like stretching is the extent of what you might want to do for field PT.
Mm-hmm.
I am a pug. So I spent most of my time in the field sitting in tents, looking at computer screens, and that's not great for fitness levels or overall health or mental health. So I was a big advocate of field PT for people whose field experience involves a lot of that. In one of the best field PT sessions I ever did, we just grabbed rocks from a nearby pile of rocks and used those for our PT, or you can use like water cans or tow bars or whatever it is. And if you learn to plan around movement patterns, it doesn't matter that the implement is weird. You just find a way to do that movement pattern with whatever implements are available.
And it looks cool.
It does. You can take sweet pictures for the battalion Instagram page.
Hell yeah, brother.
There we go. Okay. Enough on movement patterns. I think we've established that. Hopefully we'll see.
Yes.
Next category is conditioning. And these are rough categories here. I do not think this is the perfect breakdown, but I think it's the like simplest breakdown I could come up with. This definitely ties back into the last episode we did about energy systems and how this is a dramatic oversimplification and stuff, and that's fine. But the ones I've listed are aerobic, meaning long duration, low to moderate intensity. anaerobic, which will trigger Drew a little bit, but it means short duration, higher intensity. Agility, this one we're going to get nerdy for a second on, because when I'm talking about agility, I don't mean like linear sprinting, because that's not what agility is. Agility is reacting to a stimulus. I will count change of direction in agility. I think that's okay to count in that category. I'm comfortable putting it in there, but ideally it would be change of direction that incorporates a cue that you have to react to in the moment. You don't know the change of direction ahead of time, theoretically.
Yeah. Spoiler, agility ladders are not, they have nothing to do with agility.
Yeah. We had a whole conversation. I had this like Nate Palin, if people are on Instagram, they saw it. Like agility ladders can be good tools. They're just not agility tools.
It's not what you think they are.
Yeah. But speaking of like linear speed kind of stuff, that would fall under explosiveness, but a lot of things fall under explosiveness. So anything that's like sprinting or power based kind of stuff is going to fall into this explosiveness category. Something might be both a movement pattern and explosiveness. When you're going through the checklist, if you're going to do, especially applies for like agility, explosiveness, and balance. They're the kind of things that you have to train pretty frequently to see any serious progress with. So I would not want to see a one in any of those boxes, to be honest, if we're looking at weekly frequency, because that might not be enough touches to make a huge difference. It's okay. Like if your goal does not require it at all, it's okay to not have it on there. If you are going to focus on it, you probably want to work it in relatively frequently, but that works out well because it's not super fatiguing. So you can plug it in at the beginning of the workout and then move on to some higher volume stuff afterwards.
It also doesn't have to be complicated.
No, I love throwing just broad jumps in, like do my warm up,
yeah,
do some broad jumps, go on with my workout. You guys might like standing power throw if you're worried about it.
You could, and as I'm looking at this and you're saying anaerobic triggers me, and it does. another way to think about this for folks that get a little bit confused by Latin words like aerobic, anaerobic, it's basically slow work, fast work, quick work for agility, explosive work, and then balance or technique type stuff. And there's, maybe this is a future episode or a conversation or what, but like it's interesting looking at conditioning literature and just sort of what some of the coaches out there have said. And honestly, maybe we've said this before, but I think in terms of a body of knowledge that a coaching population has put out, the endurance space is like incredibly underappreciated. And you look at what some of these coaches have kind of discovered from training athletes, some of the best coaches in the world, endurance coaches, and the name of this particular one escapes me, but like he had two categories, fast and slow, and that's it. And like, meanwhile, we sit here and we talk about aerobic, alactic, anaerobic, blah, 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 bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. It's like, go fast and then also go slow. So like, if you're looking at this and thinking, man, there's a lot of movement patterns, there's a lot of modalities, how do I fit this all together? It's like, go slow a couple times a week, go fast a couple times a week, and then be quick sometimes and be explosive. And that should take care of most of that, I would think.
It really does.
Did you talk about work rest ratios with any of these?
No, it's, you can like see it in my program for the week, but I didn't include it on the instructions page. And maybe that's something that needs to get added. Spoiler alert to everybody listening, there's some edits that will probably happen between recording of this and posting the form.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of thinking out loud, because one of the ways you can tweak some of these and thinking about this from a kind of group training perspective for some of the speedier stuff, like the intervals and things like that, and, you know, we'll call it anaerobic for now, or aerobic, like with the aerobic work, resting as long as it takes for you to do the thing is like a pretty safe bet. And then for the kind of anaerobic-y, speedier type stuff, resting for longer than it took you to do the thing is a pretty safe bet. So when you're thinking about how do I structure this with all these people, that's one maybe tactic you could utilize, which might be a step removed from this form, but while we're talking about conditioning.
Yeah, that falls into the category. Like I had to triage pretty heavily what made it onto the form, because my goal was to have like one page for setting up an actual training plan, one page for like other considerations, and then one page of instructions, and then done. And if like there's only so much you can squeeze in
at all.
Because as soon as you start adding like work to rest ratios, now you have to talk about like a bunch of other programming considerations. But I think that one might make the cut. I might have to try and work that in there.
Forget I said it.
No, I think it matters though.
Thanks, man.
Because that's like a classic one you see happen at military PT is training that was intended to be explosiveness or speed that becomes not that because they keep the rest window too short that nobody can put maximum intent into the training.
I think that people do that more often than they don't.
All the time.
I think.
I just like 2 weeks ago or something, I watched a guy outside the window of the gym I work in just throwing a medicine ball back and forth for like 20 minutes with no rest.
That's dumb.
It was wild. Yeah,
that's stupid.
I mean, he was burning calories. He was exercising. But I don't think he was doing what he thought he was doing.
You could also punch a wall for an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, that burns calories too. But no, I think just as an aside as well, like I don't think many people think about this or realize it, but you can train yourself to run slow accidentally by doing speed type work, anaerobic type work, intervals, whatever you want to call them, and not resting as long as you should between those efforts. So yeah, maybe too much for a singular form, but worth unpacking.
And that is a theme of this whole thing, is that like every single thing on this form, the rabbit hole goes way deeper than this form goes. And that's where seeking out human performance staff to review what you're doing and learn a little bit more, like there will always be more to learn. This is intended to just scratch the surface with like the basic framework.
Isn't there a Yoda quote?
Probably.
About learning? I don't know. Figure it out.
Anyway. Last one on the, I lumped this under conditioning. I don't think a lot of people would consider it conditioning. I don't even know what category you would put it in. But I think people underestimate how trainable balance is. And there is some neat evidence about like balance training and injury risk reduction and things like that. I think it is worth training.
Pause. Doing curls on a Bosu wall, not balance training.
Not really, no. I'm not as anti Bosu ball as a lot of people are.
I am.
I think Bosu balls are fine. Everybody goes back. Who was the guy who did his graduate thesis on Bosu balls?
Do we know?
He's a baseball strength and conditioning coach. He's pretty famous. He's a jerk.
I don't know.
Eric Cressy. Yeah. You don't know?
No, I know Eric Cressy. Is he the one that said backs? No, that's somebody different. Anyway.
I mean, he definitely tore into Bosu balls based on his thesis. But if anybody actually goes back and reads his thesis, which has been published, you can go read it.
You don't have to.
He trained a bunch of athletes on Bosu balls and then tested them on sprinting. And that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because if I was going to train somebody on something, I would then test them on the thing that it's supposed to improve, not a random unrelated thing. Like, nobody should be shocked that Bosu ball training doesn't make you a better linear sprinter. You probably wonder whether Bosu ball training helps with balance, because that's what it is.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, balance, like, I understand. Yes, I agree with you. It's something that can be worked on.
Yeah. My overall take on Bosu balls, right, is don't use balance as a way to bastardize another exercise.
Yeah.
Train that exercise and then separately train balance. That's fine. It makes tons of sense.
I can get behind that.
Balance training is weird. I have never personally executed like balance training in a formation. I've strictly done that like on my own. I don't know what the solution is.
Here's a hot take.
It could be done.
Do yoga.
Yeah. I mean, yoga would work.
There you go.
There's lots. You can get like AirX pads. You can like try and walk on a curb. There's like a million things you can do to train balance. I would encourage people to do it more, but it is really hard to work into unit training.
Go trail running.
I did put it on there. I put it on there. Maybe it comes off. I don't know, but I think it's worth keeping on there for people to at least think about it.
I'm being intentionally cynical. I'm being intentionally cynical because I see a lot of strength coaches just have athletes do circus tricks because they're hard. And then the strength coach can justify why you should come back because you couldn't touch your nose and pat your head while standing on one foot on a Bosu ball. It's like, come on. Unilateral type stuff. Sure. Trail running. I mean, I threw that in there because in all seriousness, like trail running on uneven terrain, like And that's the knock against some of the Bosu ball stuff, some of the Eric's pad stuff. It's like you want to train on the surface that you're competing on. And
it's true.
You know, I doing my masters overseas, like we saw this with soccer, rugby, all that kind of thing. It's like you're not competing on an unstable surface. Why would you train on an unstable surface? All that does is reduce the amount of force you can produce. And that's really what we're after, is producing force. Blah, 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 blah. All that is to say that, like, if balance is something that you think you are uniquely interested in, you're probably then the type of person that could take some time to go and like research how to actually do it effectively.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyway, carrying on.
Last section, people will notice that there is a column of training modalities that is empty, and that is for you to put in mission or goal specific types of training that you are going to include in your program. This might come directly from commander's intent or like unit policy. Lots of units prescribe certain days you do certain things, or every week you have to do certain things. Combat focused PT and or rucking, that appears a lot. In our example, I included combatives. A lot of commanders want to see that. You have to plan for it. You have to consider how it fits into the plan. It can incorporate lots of things in there. You could incorporate, swimming would fall into this category.
More people should swim.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough given that like each installation usually has one pool, if that.
Yeah.
So it's hard to do regularly with large groups. That can be tough. And there's a lot of like logistic friction of like getting there, changing, getting in, making sure nobody drowns, all that kind of stuff.
I think I'm making this up as I'm saying it. I think if the military normalized gymnastics and swimming, we would have a much fitter force.
Colonel Gist, if you're listening, you're welcome.
Did he say that?
No, but those are like the foundational classes. It's
right,
gymnastics, boxing, and swimming.
I mean, you could throw boxing in there too, but like, I don't know if people want to get punched in the face all that bad, but like swimming and gymnastics, I think would be.
Yeah. It's good. It's good stuff.
Thank you. Carry on.
No disagreement here. The next part, pretty straightforward. If you're working down the form, it's the weekly schedule portion. It's kind of straightforward. This is, the form doesn't explicitly say you have to have warm-ups and cooldowns, but you could include that in here. I used pretty shorthand stuff when I was filling it out. I just like wrote dynamic warm-up. I didn't write like every exercise that goes into a dynamic warm-up. I would suggest that warm-ups should be like a little bit activity specific. Like I have a warm-up that I do if I'm going to run, and like a slightly different warm-up I'm going to do if I'm going to like squat or deadlift and things like that. If you want to like go the like army approved MFT route, you have your general dynamic and specific warm-up. Don't really care, just warm up. I would also encourage people to not think of warm up as like wasted time. It is a place where you can incorporate things you need that you're not going to hit on elsewhere in the workout. So some like plyometric-y stuff could fit in here a little bit. This is where some of the explosiveness can fit in. You'll see it in a couple of the example workouts where there's a warm up followed by some explosiveness followed by the main, quote unquote, main workout.
You should jump in your warm ups. And I say that as somebody who's now 34 and knows a lot more of that, because like jumping one leg, two legs, sideways, whatever, onto things, off of things, that is a skill that goes away quickly. And if you stay good at it, I mean, I'm thinking of like Colonel Conkey, and we had him on talking almost about this exact same thing. And by virtue of being a rugby player and just having that kind of movement, I think that speaks a lot to how he's able to have stayed as fit as he is for as long as he has, is just being explosive and jumpy and yada, yada, yada. So
big fan of jump ropes and warmups. I know not a lot of units are sitting on like 30 or 40 jump ropes, but that's not that hard to acquire if you really wanted them.
I would throw that in with swimming and gymnastics, jump ropes. Yeah. Thank you. That's a good one. Yeah.
They're a useful and very inexpensive tool.
Double Dutch. No, double Dutch with your fire team.
We're coming full circle back to physical education from the start of this episode, man. Like, this is all classic gym class stuff.
Yep.
Cool. I also use this space to note where each of those workouts is going to happen. So the first thing I write down is the location, because that should get you thinking about what equipment do you have at that location, right? If you're going to meet at the track, okay, cool. You got a track. You might have some pull-up bars or dip bars nearby, but you probably don't have a lot of equipment. If you're at your unit's area, maybe your unit has water cans, Skedcos, maybe they have some actual fitness equipment, sandbags, things like that. if you have a gym in a box type of thing, awesome. But you're probably gonna have to schedule that with other units that want it. Usually people have like a weekly rotation for that kind of thing. Does your unit allow you to go to the gym during PT? Does it have to be on a certain day? You can like start to plan in all those things so you can factor in the equipment you're going to have available and what you can train there that you might not be able to train elsewhere. All that falls in here. And the rest of it is just kind of writing out what you're going to do. And as you go, I would encourage filling this out either like on a computer or in pencil so that you can go through. And like, as you put things in a day's plan, you can go back up to those movement patterns and conditioning modalities and check, like put a little hatch mark on each one as you program it to see what your frequency looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything more to say there?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this is where people will probably spend most of their time is planning out the week.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like you just mentioned, sort of constantly referring back to the frequencies that you laid out and then sort of secondarily figuring out an appropriate distribution of those frequencies across the week.
I'll put a note in here too, going back to like MFT Schoolhouse kind of stuff. Their template and the one I used to teach on would also require you to fill in like percentage of one rep max.
Don't do that.
And things like that on all these things.
Don't do that.
I just don't think it's smart. In the environment most military people are training in with like the level of predictability they have. And especially when a ton of your training sessions are probably not even going to happen in a gym where you're not even going to have barbells and things like that. I think just rolling with RPE is probably good enough. And I think it saves people a lot of time. And I'm not sure that extra time comes with significant returns.
We already did do a whole episode on auto regulation, but yeah, don't do. I mean, pacing. So paces I could probably get behind maybe, but sort of kind of like what I mentioned earlier, as far as designators for pace or proxies for pace, those can work just as well. So like,
yeah.
I don't know if I would necessarily tell a company to run slow because you're going to have people that just like trot, but you could do like a nasal breathing pace as an indicator or ventilatory threshold, which is something we talk with Alec about, just, you know, a 12 word sentence and run at a pace you can sustain. So there's ways you can get around that, but yeah, don't do percentages. That's stupid.
I also, going back to the pace thing too, I've had an uptick recently in messages asking me about like, I did the same run on two different days and my pace was totally different. Am I like backsliding? Is there something wrong with my training? What's going on?
You're dying.
I think like in an environment, like any military training is inherently going to be hybrid training, right? You're going to have to train for both strength and endurance. And what that means is you're going to carry some fatigue from training into other types of training. And there are lots of other reasons your pace could change. It could be the temperature outside. It could be how hydrated you are, how much sleep you got, or a million other things. But I think in this population, the most likely reason you're seeing significant undulations and what pace you can maintain at the same heart rate or whatever is probably just the fatigue you're carrying from other activities.
Yes.
And that's fine. That's not a bad thing. That fatigue is masking it, but it doesn't mean your gains are gone.
Well, and two, I mean, I think the whole reason we wanted to do this episode and the questions people ask us about is like, how do I take training principles and apply those to teams or groups? One easy way to do that is by using autoregulation, because a pretty consistent failure point for team type training traditionally, I mean, to use an example, would be something like percentages. And there will be coaches who will yell at me and say, well, my football team 85 or whatever. Okay, fine, go away. If you try to have a company of whatever 50 soldiers do 85% of their one rep max, like, one, there's so many questions that are going to come up about, well, how accurate were those one rep max tests, like how long ago were they, blah 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 blah. How many people are going to get injured trying to do some artificial number based off? So autoregulation is nice because it can take into account how everybody is feeling on a given day. If you've done your homework ahead of time and you have a group that understands what, you know, two reps in reserve actually means, then you're hitting the appropriate intensity level for everybody in your organization. And similarly with the pace stuff, it's like, you know, maybe you could use heart rate if everybody's rocking a chest strap, but I doubt that they are. So the ventilatory threshold thing is not, I mean, like there's, that's why I am so strongly opinionated about autoregulation, because I think it solves for a lot of the issues that people seem to run into when they try to take something they saw from a four letter organization, you know, called the NSCA that says here's how you should do it, and then it doesn't work.
I'll give you the flip side too, though, and this is what basically all of my past platoon sergeants would say, or like any of the senior
disagree with all
I worked with, is that that also requires you, like, that puts a lot of weight on the individual to gauge their own effort.
Holy shit.
And you're going to have a lot of people who take that as an opportunity to sandbag. But I think that's true. And I think that's to some degree unavoidable. But I also think that, like, in an organization where you're going to trust people with the application of lethal force, you should probably also be able to trust people with how hard they try in a workout.
Well, yeah, but you could make the same argument about percentages. I've like trained an entire team, and it's like, because you're worried about how long the session's taking, like you got to go from part A to part B. Not everybody's hitting 85% of their winter max.
And the next thing I'm going to say is going to be a little bit mean, but like every single time I taught a master fitness trainer class, I had to start the week with explaining the alligator eats the bigger number. So which way the greater than less than signs go. That was always like a 5 or 10 minute lesson. We had to cover that. And then there was a longer lesson on how to actually take a percentage of a number. Because there are like a ton of people that like literally blew their mind that when we said 85%, that means like literally 85% of the one rep max. They like in their heads, it just means like, oh, 85% effort or like 50% effort. Like those actually mean things.
I also don't think maybe this, okay, intentionally hot take. I don't think tactical athletes ever need to one rep max.
No, that's pretty true.
There's no reason.
They will, I mean, on their own, but
sure, they will on their own. But like, I don't need to know your one rep max. I don't care.
It's true.
We've
gotten way off track.
Yeah.
There's a reason percentage of max is not on this.
I wanted to say that so people would slide into your DMs and get pissed off.
And like Drew mentioned, like you could include pace or just like have people keep track of like their paces and their splits and things so they know what to focus on. If you're going to do a track workout, it might be smart to like tell people what splits they're supposed to hit and stuff.
Yeah, whatever. For sure.
Anyway, just to like touch on a couple of things we mentioned up front that I think are good to echo here. The reason for it only being a week, you can absolutely plan for a month if you want to, or you could do the classic, like write out your general focus for each day farther out and then plan the actual details of the workouts like a week ahead of time. I think that works pretty well, but I think in a lot of times in the military, like a week is just about as much predictability as you can really expect. And then as we mentioned many times, go ahead.
I think you should, like, if you're the person at your organization that's creating this thing, you should have written somewhere a broader plan. That doesn't mean you should periodize anything, you know, any of that stuff, but like you should, because otherwise what I could see happening is like doofus
totally A. random weeks. Yeah.
Doofus A is in charge of week one. Doofus B is in charge of week. Just thinking out loud.
Yep. So there should be some overarching planning, but it doesn't necessarily have to be super detailed. I think that's a fair summary. That is kind of the purpose of those planning dates that we mentioned at the top of the form, is so that you can keep in mind what's coming up that you're focusing on and like how you might need to navigate that.
And what would be cool is if you, because again, these are weekly, you could assemble these over time in a binder, for example.
Absolutely.
You should.
It is designed that way. Yes.
And should is bold and italicized here. You should be able to flip from one to the next and kind of see a progression. And the progression should emerge as a product of the performance of your group, not some, you know, hey, we're going to do, like we talk about with the periodization stuff, we're going to do six sets of three at 85% 12 Tuesdays from now. That's not what I mean. But like, you should have some progressions built in.
Yep, 100%. And then I already talked about it plenty, but just to rehash, like a lot of people, for whatever reason, have asked me for field PT plans lately. as though a field PT plan would be any different from a garrison PT plan. I don't know what stuff you have available when you go to the field. You could be at a division headquarters with a giant Taj Mahal thing going on, or you could be in like a scout platoon where you have nothing.
Do burpees. I don't know. Just do burpees.
But at the end of the day, the exact same checklist still works regardless mm-hmm. of what you have with you and where you are and all that stuff. So that's the idea, is to make this kind of universally applicable regardless of equipment or facilities and things like that. Cool. We won't spend too much time on this because Drew just riffed on emergent periodization, quote unquote, Drew's model. Just the idea that like progression is a result rather than a prediction.
Which is right, by the way.
But there is a progression box on the form, so you can write out kind of how you envision this going. I think it makes more sense because I wrote in some examples here. It was a credit to Drew. It was his idea to create an example filled out version of the form, because I think it makes some of the stuff make a little bit more sense. But like, for example, on here, like we have a couple zone two sessions on the week. The progression for those, you would be keeping an eye on like total volume, because you might be able to increase volume gradually over time. You would keep an eye on what pace individuals can maintain while staying in that zone. Those are ways you could monitor for progression there. Several of the events in here can serve as benchmarks for tracking progress. I mentioned Viking broad jumps. I included them in here. You could keep track of people's like best broad jump, like every couple of weeks, just like measure what their best one is. You can measure some power that way. You can also, like for any of the barbell type of movements, you can keep track of what weights they're doing and see if progress is happening at the same rate of perceived exertion, times on the track workout, stuff like that. And then because our example week here included combatives, like how would you measure progress on combatives? That's pretty hard. But I think a pretty straightforward way is adding additional technique drills as people become more and more proficient and like opening up their, I don't know, variety of skills they've quote unquote mastered.
Get a black belt.
Yeah, exactly.
Does the army do that? Does the army have belts?
The army has different levels of combatives. 1, 2, 3, 4.
The Marine Corps has belts, don't they?
I'm not sure.
If somebody out there is in the Marines, let us know if you have karate belts.
We do need to.
Sorry, McMap belts.
We do. I'm going to, before Drew and I hit record, we were talking about like to-do list stuff for the podcast. I need to try and get Matt Larson on the podcast to talk about Modern Army Combatives Program.
Is that?
We'll try for that one.
Is that what it's called, Modern Army Combatives Program?
Yeah. It's also the Married Army Couples Program. They have the same acronym. It gets confusing sometimes, but.
Is there a historical Army Combatives Program or just modern?
I don't know. I don't know.
Modern, just modern.
Save the question for when we get Matt Larson on the podcast. He's the one who created it.
Fair enough. No, cool. Dude, he's that. If you he'll just kick my ass.
That's also probably true.
Yeah, I don't mess with people that create combatives.
All right, we have completed page one of the form. We're moving on to page two. This should be pretty brief because these are some like fairly self-explanatory boxes. One is labeled assessment. Depending on like what kind of model you subscribe to, some people would like want to set aside like an assessment reassessment day or an assessment reassessment week. I don't really think those are that necessary. You can do that if you want to. I know like when I was a platoon leader, we used to do like the NFL combine or like a slightly modified version of it because it was kind of cool and like people enjoyed that. And that was also back in the APFT era. So it was nice to give like the bigger, stronger guys something to show their skills on when the skinny guys were dominating the APFT. And that would kind of serve as like an assessment reassessment thing. So you can do that if you want to. Could be cool just to like benchmark people, but it's also entirely possible to build assessments into your program and just monitor progress on things you're doing anyway without pausing and like taking a test day. Examples on this one, since they're training up for E3B, you could do a diagnostic EPFA. Since there's a 12-mile ruck as part of E3B, you could do a 6-mile or a 3-mile or a 4-mile or whatever ruck assessment to see how fast people are and like gauge how much you can progress them over the next few weeks on rucking. Lots of things you can do. Any thoughts on assessments, Drew?
What is EPFA?
That is the new fitness test they use for anybody going for EIB, EFMB, ESB.
Hmm.
You can do a whole episode on it at some point if you want. You do a bunch of stuff.
I am pro assessments being built into training plans. However, I think that that's a little bit easier with kind of one-on-one.
It's true. It's harder training with groups.
Yeah. So like for the long and strongers out there, like we we did kind of a pre and post with the 2 mile for this phase. Like that tends to work well in a group. But just recognizing that all an assessment gives you is a snapshot in time. It's mm-hmm. it's not like a character trait of somebody. So, you know,
none of those maxes are true the next day.
Yeah, exactly. So like use it if you think it's going to be a net positive. If it's going to be a negative, then don't use it.
100%.
But yeah, that's probably its own episode. That's the point.
Yeah. Next box is facilities and equipment. Pretty self-explanatory. Are you allowed to go to the gym? How often do you have a gym in a box? How often? What equipment is in it? This one requires a combatives gym, so you better have like a reservation for that combatives gym or know that it exists, or maybe you have some mats that you can fold out in your bay or whatever it is. This is just your chance to like think through what do you have accessible and like be a little bit creative here too, right? Like a lot of army equipment is also fitness equipment if you want to use it that way, right? Skedcos, water cans, I mentioned those earlier.
Anything's a barbell if you're strong enough. Or something.
It's true that, I mean, like the army loves litter carries and litter runs and things like that. Like all of those implements can absolutely be used intelligently for physical training as well.
And unintelligently.
That's also true. Scheduling. We mentioned that quote right up front in the policy, right? PT does not have to be at 6:30. Check with your local policy. I will say though that on an astonishing number of occasions, people have told me that the policy at their installation is that it has to be at that time. And then when I go check that installation's policies or actually talk to senior leaders at that installation, they're like, that policy doesn't exist. So like actually check the policy. Don't ask your boy what he heard. Like open up whatever standards book there is or just find out. And this is not like fitness specific. This is just a gripe I have with the military in general. So many problems could be solved if leaders were willing to articulate to their leaders why doing something differently might be better, right? Like if you never ask, you'll never get that possibility, right? And don't just go in, like don't walk into like a huge meeting and be like, hey, sir, I know the policy says PT's at 6:30. We're going to do something different. Cool. Like, no, come in with an explanation of why and how you're going to get after it and how you're going to mitigate risk and all that stuff. And I think you'd be surprised how often you can push the boundaries a little bit on what's allowed.
We call that the don't ask, don't expect.
Policy. There you go. And a big one, and this actually goes back to the 350-1 thing, actually. 350-1 specifically mentions acclimatization when they talk about scheduling. If your mission demands are going to involve heat tolerance, if you're going to go somewhere much warmer, if you're going to go somewhere much colder, that's also a factor. But like those things should influence when and how you train. We've got classic examples of that. I think I mentioned on the podcast before, but there was an awesome one where like a company from 2nd Brigade 82nd knew they were going to Southeast Asia, did a lot of afternoon PT to prep for it, and they were the only unit there with no heat casualties. I think that's awesome. It's a perfect example of looking at specific mission demands, planning your training to prepare you specifically for those things, and having it pay off in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty basic thing, but I think using something like this and forcing yourself to write it down can go a long way.
Another one too, I've heard a lot of people say that like the Army doesn't have enough gym facilities for people to train the way the Army wants them to train. The Army doesn't have enough gym facilities for everybody to go to the gym at the exact same time. That is true. And it'd be irresponsible to have that much anyway.
It's like a bank with money.
Right? But if you did PT at any time other than like 6:30 to 8 or lunchtime, you would probably find the gym pretty much empty. So that's another scheduling factor you can consider, is that if you need gym facilities to train for whatever the thing is you're trying to train for, or if you need the pool, another great example, going back to the swimming thing, or if you need the combatives gym, or if you need anything specific that is in high demand with a lot of other people, if you're able to plan a way to utilize that equipment or facility at a time when it's not super popular, you have much better odds of getting it or getting it more frequently.
Which like is true for just everything in life.
Yeah.
Like I hear it. We've mentioned this before, but like the whole, like, oh, the army doesn't own enough gyms for me to like do my thing. It's like, well, neither does the University of Alabama. Like they rotate teams through there.
Yeah.
I think it's just, the army is not different than anyone else by virtue of the fact that there's not one barbell for every soldier in the, correct, in the military.
Another box, and some people would probably want me to make this box bigger. I'm apparently not holistic enough, who knows, but this is the non-physical considerations and other resources. So like things that aren't necessarily explicitly physical, but that are related to your physical training. Some examples I mentioned in here, combatives training, a little bit of injury risk kind of stuff, might request some athletic trainer coverage or some medic coverage if you don't have athletic trainers. Same might apply if you're going to go to an obstacle course or something. Another one, since the train up is for E3B and a lot of E3B is not just physical, there's a lot of cognitive, like memorizing specific tasks and how to perform them, might incorporate some cognitive performance training. If you're in a unit that has resources, you might have that organically. If you're not, there's other resources on the installation that you can engage for some cognitive skills type of training. And then block leave was the other planning date that was mentioned on the example form. You know, you're going to have a week or two where like nobody's around. Might be cool to bring in somebody with a strength and conditioning background, somebody with a nutrition background, whoever, just to talk about tactics that you can take with you on block leave of like, maybe you don't want to go to the gym during block leave. Like I'm a huge nerd, so I usually worked out more on block leave. It was awesome because you have all that free time and stuff, but some people don't want to do that. What can you do to maintain your fitness? There's plenty of cool resources on like, you can decrease the volume of your training dramatically. As long as you maintain the intensity, you'll preserve the gains you've achieved. And then you can get back after it right when you get back. You could plug in like a class for people on how to do that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a million things you could consider in here on non-physical components of performance that you could incorporate.
Yeah. I mean, like with Long and Strong, again, shout out Long and Strong. We've got that for this phase, we included some meditation stuff, some mindfulness stuff. So yeah, there are a lot of easy and creative ways that you can incorporate things that aren't just physical.
Awesome. And the last block is pretty straightforward. After action review. I know back in my day of doing normal unit PT, at the end of the session, you'd always do like 3 sustains, 3 improves. This can be that kind of thing. You can like capture those notes on here.
You guys did that for every training session?
Yeah, a lot of times that we did it every single training session. Yeah, it's not uncommon.
So like, hey, team, what are 3 things you liked about this?
Like a lot of it was like whoever was leading PT that day, like feedback on like, did they plan a good session? Did they lead it well? Was it organized? Whatever. Yeah, real thing. But it doesn't have to be like daily stuff. It can also just be like, how is the program going? Is there anything we need to adjust? This is a place like in the example, I mentioned that one of the days is gym in a box training. Anybody who's used a gym in a box in like the middle of the winter in a cold place, or arguably even worse in the middle of the summer in a really hot place. I once burned my hands on a hex bar in South Carolina trying to use an outdoor gym thing at Fort Jackson.
Because you should be using straight bars.
Sorry. But but like in this example scenario, the company only allows you to go to the gym one day per week. Well, maybe during like inclement weather scenarios, you might request an exception to policy so you can go 2 days per week or something like that. Or maybe you adjust the training emphasis to focus on something different, and that's fine. Yeah, so this is just a place to capture notes. And like Drew said, ideally you would keep these all so you can like look back through them and stuff. And this is the place for like, as you identify issues or as you identify things you want to incorporate into future training plans, they would be recorded here. So next time you can remember it.
Yeah. And I would just be careful, I think, with, and this is why I was kind of giggling about the 3 sustains, 3 maintains or whatever. And maybe this is me putting on my strength coach hat, but like opening yourself up to too much feedback can result in you kind of chasing your tail a little bit. If your goal becomes, hey, I need to please everybody.
Yeah.
And you know, so again, just kind of one of those things to keep in the back of your mind. That's not to say that you shouldn't, especially with a form like this, like for sure, take notes and encourage people to give feedback. But at the same time, it's like, if you're the person designated to lead PT and you have created, I guess you've created a good repertoire with your organization as like the subject matter expert in that thing.
Did you mean rapport?
What did I say?
You said repertoire.
Yeah, I meant rapport. Sorry, I got my French my French words confused. How do you say sorry in French?
Oh, my French teacher's gonna be so mad that I forgot this. I don't remember.
Sorry, in French. Point being, take notes, encourage the after action stuff, but just like, you know, if your goal and your commander's intent.
Désolé. Sorry about that.
What?
Désolé is sorry in French. It took me a minute.
Oh, désolé. If your commander's intent and your goal for your training phase or your plan or whatever is sound, as long as you're kind of headed in that direction,
yeah,
you know, expect some haters, and that's fine.
Hopefully people in the army realize that not every piece of feedback needs to result in a change to the plan.
I know, but everyone thinks that they're entitled to feedback.
Yeah. Honestly, with physical training, when people tell you it sucks, that may be an indicator that that's exactly the kind of training you need to focus on.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes.
It doesn't always have to suck horribly.
It's like, hey, Sergeant Major, this is the 10th time this week we've done Murph. It sucks. Well, that means it's working. It's like, no.
That okay, doesn't. Fair. That's a good counter argument. That's good.
That means it's stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah. So maybe that's a bit of a ramble, French included. But those were my thoughts looking at the after action piece.
That's really all I got. The last page of the form is instructions on how to fill out the form, and it's all the stuff we just kind of talked about. That's really the whole deal. What did we miss in terms of things to think about when you're planning unit training?
I don't think it's that we've missed anything. I just think from maybe like a 10,000 foot view, again, we mentioned this at the top, but like people seem to reach out to us asking about the unit training component of physical fitness as though it is this like dramatic departure from, you know, one-on-one training or things that you would do for yourself. And it's really not. It just becomes more of an exercise in like people management and logistical flow of a session. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're the type of person who gravitates towards part A, part B, part C, and I've got to do this thing and then that thing and this thing and that thing, that might work with one person or five people. But if there's 50, you have to understand that you can be a little bit more flexible, but in that flexibility, have maybe some like rules in place, which is kind of what this form is meant to create. So we talked about auto-regulation as a tool that you can use to account for the fluctuation and fatigue for that many people, movement patterns over implements as another thing. So like, you know, again, I see this happen a lot because a gym in a box, for example, may only have four barbells and you've got 50 soldiers. It's like, well, crap, I guess we can't do squats today. It's like, well, no, you can still do knee flexion. It just might look a little bit different than trying to cycle everybody through hitting three sets of five at 85%. Like, so thinking through the logistical pieces of that, again, this is the type of form that could easily become 20 pages long, and it mm-hmm. intentionally is not that. It's just meant to serve as a guideline. But I guess those are kind of my thoughts or bits and pieces of conversations that I've had with people in the past. One thing I might add to this, just as a thinking point for folks, and I don't know if we have if we add this to the form or not, but active recovery is something that is, well, should be utilized at like a company level. Because again, you do have a lot of people, there's a lot going on. Taking a day off of training or taking a light day is not bad training. It's actually smart training. So don't think that just because there are five blank spaces for you to fill in sessions means that you need to have five hard sessions. I guess my takeaway point there would be like effective fitness is a summation of a lot of good training, not like flash in the pan. We hit it really hard this week. Oh crap. Now everyone's hurt and injured.
Absolutely. So
just keep that in mind. But yeah, I'm going to step off my soapbox now.
I'll throw out a couple last kind of disclaimer things that I don't think I mentioned during our chat that I think are important. When you're programming, running, an endurance type of activity, I would generally program based on time, not distance. It usually does a better job of accounting for different ability levels.
Yeah, I would.
If you tell everybody to go run 2 miles, your fastest runners are going to be running for the shortest amount of time when they can handle the most volume, and your worst runners are going to be running for the longest amount of time. Whereas if you have everybody run for 20 minutes or 30 minutes, your mm-hmm. fastest runners will get more distance in that amount of time. And that matches up with how you would want to allocate running volume or endurance training volume based on ability.
I know we talked about that in the episode we had with Scott Johnston. Yep. So if you want to hear more about that strategy, go there. But yeah.
Yep. I would also mention, generally, this is not a hard and fast rule, but I would generally avoid running and or rucking on adjacent days. It's where the bulk of overuse injuries tend to come from, is lower body overuse, musculoskeletal injuries largely attributable to like load bearing kind of stuff. You don't always have to do that, but it's a generally pretty good idea to avoid that, especially if you haven't like progressed into that.
Have we done an episode on like a hybrid weekly layout?
I don't know, other than this episode. I will say we did, going way back in the archive, Rob Orr's episode, he talked about rucking a lot, and he mentions that like based on all the research he's done, the like the quote unquote optimal point for like frequency of rucking where you maximize performance but minimize injury risk is around that once every 10 days time frame. So you don't necessarily have to ruck, like you can ruck once a week. I wouldn't go much more than once a week, but I wouldn't go much less than every other week either if rucking is something that's important to your goal. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I love Rob. I think really for that type of thing, like you should find out for yourself what you can tolerate.
Sure. I'd agree with that.
But that's probably, that's its own conversation.
Entirely. That's the whole, at some point, maybe I'll convince you to do an episode on it. Did we do an episode on the International Olympic Committee thing, that too much too soon thing?
Maybe.
I don't know. I did a series of Instagram posts on this back
Stay
in the day.
Tuned.
I thought it was the greatest content I had ever made. I thought it was super cool. It's one of my favorite studies ever. And like, it just didn't resonate with people on Instagram. I think it's because it's too complicated to put on Instagram, to be honest.
This is going to be great. No one reads.
Right. They assembled an international panel of experts, like Olympic caliber coaches in all sorts of disciplines. And they asked them how much training volume is too much. And they published this two-part report. It's available for free on BJSM. Go check it out. It's awesome. But the bottom line is that there actually is no such thing as too much. The athletes who train at the highest volumes are actually the least injured. What there absolutely is too much too soon. So it's not about some kind of total threshold volume. It is about how much volume you are prepared for. And I think that's what we end up screwing up with soldiers, is we think that soldiers should be able to handle this much. I don't care how much they should be able to handle. I care how much they can handle now and what your plan is to get them where you think they should be, not to just beat them over the head with what you think they should be capable of.
Which, I mean, to keep this relevant to what we're talking about, is an important point to make, because as you're planning this out, you know, whether you intentionally lay it out or just have it in the back of your mind, being able to scale up and scale down, I think that's, that really, I think, is what people are asking for when they reach out asking for how to train for like a group. It's like, you know, plan for the middle of the road, but then have things in place to account for the left and the right. Because what you don't want is, and we see this all the time with like formation runs, you've talked about this, where like your fastest dudes aren't getting anything out of it and your slowest people are basically getting their shit kicked in. And the same goes with resistance training too, which is why we keep harping on autoregulation, but like having things in place to account for that so that you don't end up with a scenario where you've got some people who just can't do it and they're sitting on an assault bike staring at their phone for an hour. And then other folks who come back later in the day for a second session because they don't feel like they did enough. So
absolutely.
Again, we could go on about that forever.
And then one last note, I know there are lots of coaches out there that have their own version of this kind of thing that they prefer.
Ours is better.
They like filling out. This by no means replaces that. I think this is kind of a least common denominator version of a programming template. Like, this is like as simple as we could make it. If you're a coach and that's your whole job and you want to get a little fancier with it and do some more, keep going, right? Like, this is, I mean, you shouldn't need me to say that this is not official. It is obviously not official. It's something we created and just threw on the internet. Like, you don't have to do anything we say here.
It's made to look official as like a joke.
Yeah, pretty much. So hopefully that explains that. You can use this template. You cannot use this template. You can modify this template. You can make your own. All that's totally fine. It just seemed like there should be something for this. It's kind of ridiculous that there's not. So now there's something, albeit unofficial.
Boom. So if you like it, you'll find it on the website. If you guys have questions on anything, as always, reach out. If anything we've said today has triggered you, message Alex on Instagram and he'll fight you. about it.
That's likely, yes.
I may or may not engage. So, boom.
Enjoy.
I don't, what do I hit? Where's the end thing? Hey, Alex, let's cover our ass real quick.
Oh, great idea, Drew. All right, guys. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode. Before you go, please rate and review the pod on the listening platform of your choice. You can also visit us on our website at www.mopsinmos.com. That's mops, the letter N, mos.com. You can check out the library of podcast episodes, our latest blog entries, any helpful resources, and also sign up for our newsletter.
Drew nailed it. Just to underline a couple of things, the podcast entries have in-depth show notes on the website. So if you missed anything or you want to read any of the research we talk about, it is all there. You can, at the bottom of the website, sign up with your email and receive future updates from us. The blog posts go a little bit more in depth in kind of written form on a couple of topics we get questions about all the time. But most importantly, I just want to ask all you guys, our best way the word gets out is absolutely word of mouth. So tell your friends, tell the people you work with, anybody you think would find it useful. Thanks for spreading the word.
If you have any questions or comments, feel free to shoot us an email at either Drew or Alex at mopsandmos.com.
Or there's a contact form on the website.
Thank you.